Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Wednesday, the 29th of October, welcome, 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 friends, on into the show. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
So Avi, here's the choice that millions of Americans will stare down this fall. Pay double out of pocket for the same healthcare plan or go without health insurance. The Affordable Care Act's pandemic era subsidies that capped premiums at about 8.5% of income are on the chopping block, and they are at the center of the political standoff in Washington that has shut down the government. In Pennsylvania alone, Penny says about 150,000 people could walk away from coverage next year. New Jersey expects about 60,000 people to lose help altogether. And so this hour, we're going to dig into what is driving this spike in out-of-pocket costs, who gets squeezed first, and whether a last-minute deal can stop a healthcare death spiral. We'll talk more about that with our guests. We have Julie Rovner coming on the show. She's a chief Washington correspondent for KFF Health News. And we also will hear from a person who runs Penny. That's Pennsylvania's ACA Marketplace. And we want to hear from you, our listeners. I mean, what would you do to make health insurance more affordable in the United States? Also, if you've seen or you think you're going to see that spike in your health care insurance, give us a call. Tell us your story. That number is 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, share this video. There's going to be a lot of important information shared. Also, leave your comments in the chat.
Yeah, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. Just want to echo what Cherry said. If you are out there shopping in the marketplace for health insurance through the ACA, would be really interested to hear your perspective this hour. What types of choices might you be making, trade-offs you might be considering? I think that would help illuminate this entire conversation for our whole audience. So again, 888-477-9499.
First, a trio of local
news stories. And since we're already talking about government shutdown, hey, why go anywhere else, right, Cherry? Amid ongoing government shutdown, the U.S. Department of Agriculture says in just a few days, it will have to suspend food assistance to SNAP recipients because it does not have enough money. Well, states in our region, they're not buying that rationale. No. Delaware, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania have joined a lawsuit against the federal government, arguing that the feds are illegally withholding SNAP benefits. They point to a $5 billion contingency fund as proof that the USDA could continue to administer benefits for perhaps half a month or more. No idea where the showdown's going to go. Of course, time very much of the essence here, because the deadline is November 1st.
Yeah, and about 1 in 8 Americans use SNAP to help buy groceries. In our region, in Philadelphia, about 500,000, just under 500,000 people rely on these benefits. That's about 30% of the city's population. So huge impact. And there's going to be a lawsuit but there's going to be a hearing that is scheduled for today. So hopefully we'll get some relief. But I just want to say, I looked on the USDA website, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, there's a sign that says that basically blames Senate Democrats and says, bottom line, the well has run dry. And for folks who are in need, you know, and really do rely on these benefits, going on that site, seeing that is like a little, it's a jab. It's
Absolutely.
A jab in the ribs.
And the backstop to the backstop here are local food banks.
Yes.
And how will they potentially deal with a surge in demand? A lot of them are already courting more donations to try to help. I just was on another website, Food Bank of South Jersey, and they had a big pop-up box right when you log on saying, we're trying to help potential SNAP benefits, help us bridge the gap. I got an email today from my daughter's daycare, of all places, saying we're trying to raise money for Philabundance, which will be part of trying to, you know, stop the bleeding here. So folks locally trying to step up, preparing for a potential catastrophe.
And I want to say one more thing, because I looked this up, and that contingency fund, that was something that was used in the 2018-2019 shutdown. So this is not...
It has been tapped into
before. It has been tapped into before. So that's why I think they're pointing to this and saying, look, we still could use this, and we'll see what happens.
Story number two, Cherry.
Yeah, a community controversy is brewing. More than 2,500 people have signed on to a petition calling for the attorney representing Keon King, the man accused of kidnapping and murdering 23-year-old Kata Scott, who went missing earlier this month. They want that attorney to step aside. This petition has been posted by the family and supporters of Kata Scott, and they are demanding justice, accountability, and protection for Black women. That's what's on that petition. And they want Shaka Johnson. He's a fairly high-profile criminal defense and civil rights attorney here in Philadelphia. They want him to step down out of respect for the family. In the petition, they write, as a respected Black attorney, Shaka Johnson's involvement in this case sends a chilling message to the Black community that even those who claim to fight for justice are willing to defend known abusers. That's what they say. Johnson appeared on Fox 29's morning show this week. He called the petition sad rhetoric, and he said he was hired by the family to represent Keon King for a prior case before they knew of his connection to the Kata Scott case. He says he will not step aside. Take a listen to some of what he had to say on that show.
People have attorneys. That is part of the constitutional protections. What few we have left, those are the constitutional protections that are still in place. Due process. You get a lawyer when you are accused of a crime, and you get a lawyer of your choosing.
And, you know, Avi, we talked about this. This has become a very emotionally charged issue, in part because the entire city was watching this case unfold. They were looking for Kata Scott, and then the police found the person who is accused of this, and they feel like, Shaka Johnson, you going to represent this guy? Yeah. Don't do it.
And he's an attorney that has such a high profile. People feel like they know him, and they feel like they know what he stands for. He's absolutely right. People have a constitutional right to a defense. And I don't think anyone would question that this man, Keon King, has the right to an attorney, that Shaka Johnson has the right to represent him. I do think, however, when you tiptoe into the waters of celebrity attorney, which he sort of has his people begin to think that you stand for something, and they also have a right to be disappointed if you take on a client. And I think that's the situation he finds himself in here. You know, whether he has courted that celebrity or not, he has it on some level. Yeah. People see him as a symbol of the community, a crusader for justice on some level. And they're allowed to be disappointed in his choices as much as he's allowed to represent Keon King.
Yeah, yeah. And I will say that he has represented some very high profile defendants, including a Philadelphia Proud Boy leader, Zachary Real. He's also represented Maurice Hill, who shot six police officers back in 2019. So he's done some high profile defense cases. But for this one right here, really struck a nerve.
Absolutely. Moving now to story number three. The Philadelphia Business Journal reports that basketball legend Charles Barkley,
Sir Charles,
is opening a steakhouse and cigar lounge in King of Prussia. Welcome home, Charles.
All right.
No opening date yet, but the steakhouse will be inside the Valley Forge Casino Resort, which is itself undergoing a large renovation, apparently. Barkley, if you don't know, former Sixer great who has been a popular analyst for decades on TNT and now ESPN. This new Barkley steakhouse and cigar lounge.
Oh, like the cigars.
You do?
I do.
No.
They make your hair stink, but I still like them.
You're a cigar smoker?
I like cigars. Yes, I do.
I am shocked. I never knew this about you.
Just occasionally.
You have a cigar of choice.
In
my
younger days.
We're derailing the whole segment here, but I know.
In my younger days, I used to really, really be into it, but not as much anymore.
What do you like about it?
I just like the smell. I just like the way they make you feel. I don't like my hair to smell like that, but I just...
You feel powerful.
It does. Okay. And they're kind of like, yeah.
Okay. Anyways. So the new Charles Barkley Steakhouse does not yet have a name that we know, at least publicly. Mm-hmm. But the question I have is what it should be called. Do you have any suggestions?
I like Sir Charles Steak and Smoke.
Ooh, that's classy.
Yeah, I want it to be classy. And by the way, I haven't been to the Valley Forge Casino Resort like that, but I would go out there to check this out.
Of course, all of my suggestions are puns.
Let me hear. Go ahead. Pun it up. Pun it up, obviously.
The audience for these jokes is mostly just me, so I'm just going to get through them, okay?
Pun it up.
Chuck's Chop House.
Okay.
The Chuck Wagon.
Ooh.
the round mound of rebounds round state grounds.
Mm-hmm. That's a rhymey one.
Yeah. there's a Steven Starr restaurant called Barclay Prime. So I think he could rip it off and just be Barclay Prime.
Okay. Maybe a trademark infringement suit, but okay. Okay. We're going to move on.
The Sixers traded me in my prime rib house.
All right.
Okay. And finally, I think this I think this is the obvious one. Sirloin Charles.
That is actually pretty good.
That's not bad.
You only save the good ones for the end.
Chuck, give me a call. Give me a call.
By the way,
no onion rings available at this restaurant because Chuck never won one.
Ooh. Low blow, low blow.
No, I love Charles. I do love Charles.
And he's very cool.
And the Sixers should not have traded him. Huge mistake.
Yeah. Big mistake there. They're living it down. And now, hopefully, I can't wait. Hopefully, he'll come. And we'll be able to meet Charles Barkley. That would be really cool.
That'd be cool. Also, a cool conversation coming up, an important conversation about health insurance premiums, which could be skyrocketing all over the country very soon. We want to hear your thoughts. Studio2@whyy.org.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. The annual enrollment period for Obamacare opens in just a few days. Millions of Americans will shop for health insurance, and they probably will not like what they see.
According to an analysis by the nonpartisan health policy group KFF, we expect to see the biggest year-over-year price hikes in the history of Obamacare. That is partially because of expiring subsidies, partially because of rising insurance costs, and partially because the former helps drive the latter.
If you're confused, don't worry. We are going to break it all down this hour, and we're going to ask how we got here to this perilous moment when health insurance could suddenly become unaffordable for so many.
Our main guest this hour, our guide really this hour, is Julie Rovner, Chief Washington Correspondent for KFF Health News. Julie, I know you're busy. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
And for our listeners at home and elsewhere, our question of the day, what would you do to make health insurance more affordable in the U.S.? And by the way, if you're shopping in these marketplaces or about to, we would love to hear your story. 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, how do you do? Drop a comment in the chat.
And so, Julie, we want you to kind of level set for us and explain to us in plain English what exactly is expiring and what does that make next year's premiums feel like? So give us an explanation, plain English, layman's terms, please.
So there are about 24 million Americans that buy their own health insurance on the Obamacare exchanges. 30 states use the federal exchange and the rest use their own exchanges. Basically, since the beginning of the Affordable Care Act, which was passed in 2010 and took effect in 2014, there has been help for people to afford these premiums. It turned out it was not as generous as a lot of people needed to actually afford insurance. So in 2021, during the pandemic, the Democrats in Congress, signed by President Biden, expanded the subsidies. And basically how the subsidies work is that they limit your premiums to a percentage of your income. And before, that had been about 2% for lower income people, up to about 8.5% for people with incomes up to four times the poverty level. And then those subsidies ended. The theory was if you earned more than four times poverty, which is about $60,000 for an individual, that you could afford your own insurance. Both of those things turned out not to be the case. Really. And so they made the tax credits more generous. So the lower income people basically could get a mid-level plan for no premium. And upper income people could get some help. They didn't have to spend more than, I think it was about 14% or I don't have the number in front of me. I'll go back and look in a second. But basically, people over 400% of poverty got subsidies for the first time. That helped dramatically lower premiums for people. And we saw enrollment in the Affordable Care Act exchanges double. Uh-huh. Now the Democrats renewed those subsidies a couple of years ago, but they expire at the end of 2025. And Democrats had obviously wanted to extend them again, but they're no longer in charge of the White House or the House or the Senate. And the Republicans have not opted to extend them. So at this moment, they are set to expire at the end of this year, which means that premiums for 2026 are going up dramatically. Now, some of it, as you said, are the premiums themselves are going up between about 17 and 30%. And we're seeing premiums go up for all kinds of insurance, not just insurance on the Affordable Care Act exchanges. We've got tariffs that are contributing to this. We've got higher medical costs in general contributing to this. We've got consolidation of healthcare providers contributing to this. But what's going to really impact these people who buy their own insurance is a loss of these additional tax credits. And so according to my colleagues here at KFF, the average premium or the average premium starting in 2026 is going to double. It's going to go up more, 114%. So it's a combination of rising premiums and these expiring subsidies that's going to make this sticker shock quite so dramatic.
Yeah, so health insurance is going to cost more and you're going to get less help from the government when you buy that insurance. So now we're up to speed and we have these projections out there, Julie, of maybe 2 million people who were insured under the ACA no longer being insured. One of my big questions, and let's imagine that is the scenario that unfolds here. One of my big questions is who those 2 million or so people are. Are they relatively young, relatively healthy, older, chronic conditions? Like the people that would be leaving these marketplaces, demographically, what might sort of define them?
Well, I can tell you that the people for whom the costs are going to go up the most tend to be older people with sort of higher incomes who are going to see the most dramatic increases. People who are going to lose these tax credits completely, who are going to see, you know, monthly premiums rise from a couple of $100 to over $1,000 and who just aren't going to be able to afford that. Also, at the lower end, people who are now getting free plans who suddenly will have to pay $50 or $100 a month and just don't have that. I would expect that people with chronic conditions, people who need, who know they expect to use and need health care, are going to hang on to their insurance to the extent that they can. And that's one of the things that goes into the increases that we're going to see is that insurers are assuming that too. And that's one of the reasons that the base premiums are going up because they're assuming that they're going to have a sicker population because healthier people will drop out if they feel like they can't afford it and it's not going to be a very good choice for them.
Because if I'm thinking about trade-offs in my own personal financing and I'm thinking, well, for the next year, I don't expect to need much health care, I might prioritize the car payment or the rent over, paying this big spike in healthcare costs. Is that the basic idea, Julie?
Exactly. Okay. That is precisely the issue.
And so I want to sort of think about this, Julie, in a different way, because prior to the pandemic, there were no, these expanded subsidies did not exist. People did not really have, a lot of people did not have access to healthcare because it was very expensive. I want you to sort of take us through how you talk about how healthcare coverage expanded thanks to these expanded subsidies, but are we going to go back to the way it was pre-pandemic or will we be worse off once these subsidies expire?
Well, we will likely go back to where we were pre-pandemic. I mean, the Affordable Care Act did help a lot of people get health insurance. There was a big expansion of Medicaid that most states, not all of them, adopted. That helped a lot of working people who previously had low incomes, but not incomes low enough to qualify for Medicaid for the first time. So a lot of people were covered by Medicaid. And as I said, there were about 12 million people who were getting these tax credits and able to afford insurance on these marketplaces. It's just that we saw with the expanded tax credits, we saw that double. So one would expect that we would go back to where we were pre these expanded tax credits.
What's the cost to taxpayers, to the government of extending these subsidies, you know, indefinitely? I mean, I would imagine that is a huge sticking point for fiscal conservatives.
It's about $35 billion a year, $350 billion over 10 years, according to the Congressional Budget Office. Just as a comparison, the the Republican budget bill cut about $900 billion out of Medicaid over the next 10 years. So you can, you know, do the math yourself. The Medicaid cuts were three times bigger than it would cost to extend these subsidies. But, you know, Republicans don't very much care for the Affordable Care Act. A lot of them blame the Affordable Care Act for the ills of our healthcare system. That's probably not fair. The ills of our healthcare system existed before and after the Affordable Care Act, but it is still something that they don't like. And they really would rather not expand these premiums. On the other hand, the irony of what's really happened in the last 4 or 5 years is that many of the people who've gotten insurance and who've, you know, that we've seen insurance expand the most in very red states, states like Florida and Georgia and Texas. And so when these premiums spike and people are faced with, you know, having to drop their insurance, a lot of these are going to be Republican voters. We also see, you know, people, small business owners, farmers and ranchers, people who have to buy their own insurance are also more likely to be Republicans than Democrats. So this is basically Republicans punishing their own voters. And there are a lot of Republicans in Congress who are starting to realize that and who are very uncomfortable with the situation that they're in right now.
Yeah, Marjorie Taylor Greene, perhaps most prominent among them. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to read this comment from Sherry, who says, I am a single woman over 60 whose position was eliminated. Being able to get health coverage through Penny was such a relief. Now I'm facing the possibility that my premiums could at a minimum triple compared to what I've been paying. I'm frustrated that Republicans seem more focused on dismantling benefits rather than improving them. The current system may work as a short-term fix, but access to health care should be a human right. That's Sherry, who wrote in on this. And so, you know, is there, we're at the timing. I just wonder, we're at this place now where everybody's starting to get that sticker shock. And people are starting to learn what those premiums are going to be. And there's still no negotiation going on between Republicans and Democrats. And I just wonder, given what I know about how slow things work, I mean, if a deal were to come together, if they were able to make some type of, you know, concessions and arrangements, I mean, has this train, is this train just sort of moving and there's nothing to, that can stop it? Or is there a way to sort of put the genie back in the bottle?
Well, there are certainly, you know, both the people who run the exchanges, federal and the state exchanges, and the insurers know that there is still an outside chance that these expanded tax credits will get renewed. So in some states, insurers filed, you know, two different premiums, depending on whether or not these are continued. It could revert back. The problem is it's really complicated. Once open enrollment begins, there's the concern that people are going to go and they're going to look, or they're going to get these notices that say, what you're going to have to pay out of pocket for your current plan is tripling. And they're going to say, I can't afford it. And even if these tax credits are restored later, they won't know and they won't bother to go back. So there's a lot of concern about doing it later. Republicans kept saying, you know, Democrats, you need to reopen the government. This is something that we can talk about in December. It's not really sort of as every day passes once open enrollment begins, it gets more and more difficult.
Yeah. So the longer this goes on, the more harder, drastic the effects. So we mentioned 24 million people who buy health insurance this way. That's a lot of people. Of course, it's still a small segment of Americans. Is there a cascading effect here in the sense that what happens with these marketplaces impacts employer provided insurance or other types of insurance that are out there? Is there a knock on effect, or will the effect largely be limited to the ACA marketplaces themselves?
There is a knock-on effect. It's not big and it's not immediate, but you know, one of the things we know is that the more people who don't have health insurance end up going for care later when they are sicker and they need more expensive care, and that care has to get, the cost of that care gets passed on to somebody, either to people with employer insurance or to the providers, or we're starting to see providers close. You add that to the Medicaid cuts that were made by the Republicans in their budget bill, and to a lot of, there have been a lot of administrative changes made by the Trump administration too, that's going to make it more difficult for people to get or continue their health insurance. And again, you know, we do know that people without insurance are an added cost to the healthcare system. So we will see inefficiency go up and prices go up for everybody else.
So Julie is going to stick with us for the rest of the hour. But for a moment, we want to break here and focus on the local impact of this potential price surge. Before we do that, let's read in a couple of comments. Let's start with, let's see, we've got Mike from Germantown. Mike is a frequent caller and a big critic of the ACA. He says the ACA was a catastrophe for small business owners. We had to pay significantly more for premiums, 2 to 3 times more. There's a lot of anger in some quarters about the ACA in general.
Michael from Philadelphia,
that's a nice comment. I am retired and carried my health insurance with me into retirement. I already know what my increase in monthly premiums will be, not even close to the increase in Obama subsidies. I have some friends whose subsidies will increase substantially. It's unfortunate. So talking about the PA impact now, we've got Devin Trolley, who's the executive director of Penny. We mentioned Penny earlier. This is the Pennsylvania Obamacare marketplace. Devin, thanks for joining us on Studio 2.
Devin will be there right in just a moment. By the way, our question of the day is, what would you do to make health insurance more affordable in the United States? Our phone number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, share this video, but also leave your comments in the live chat.
And I do think we have Devin now. Devin Trolley, executive director of Penny, Pennsylvania's Obamacare marketplace. Hey, Devin, thanks for joining us this hour on Studio 2.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Devin, we'd like to get an understanding of how many Pennsylvanians will be impacted when these subsidies expire. Give us just a broad overview.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have, like many other states, a record level of enrollment because of the affordability that's in place right now. So we have about 500,000 Pennsylvanians who get their coverage through Penny. And essentially all of them will see higher prices, some more than others. About 9 in 10 receive the enhanced premium tax credits that make coverage more affordable than it's ever been. And all of them will see increases because, you know, as was mentioned earlier, some will not receive any tax credits at all once they expire, and everyone else will see less premium tax credits. So what they pay every month will go up. Yeah.
So some of those people will choose to pay whatever is required to keep that insurance. Some will not. The estimates I saw out there from Penny were that as many as 150,000 Pennsylvanians could lose health coverage next year. First of all, is that estimate still accurate? And second of all, what is that estimate based on? How are you getting to that number?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we really looked at where enrollment was before the enhanced tax credits were put into place. And we looked at people's ability to afford coverage now compared to then. And as we all see in the news everywhere, everything else has not gotten more affordable. So we really don't think there's a chance that a lot of people will be able to accommodate these significant cost increases. So we are looking at really going back to the lower levels of enrollment that were in place at around 2020. We've also looked at, you know, what happens when certain people see higher cost increases and how many of them drop coverage in the past few years. You know, there have been smaller pockets of that, and that also aligns to that 30% of people dropping coverage.
Wow. And so I want to get an understanding. So what part of, you know, what does the federal government pay for versus the state? And are there any accommodations that the state could make to help ease the burden on these Pennsylvanians?
Yeah, so the premium tax credits are really a federally funded tax credit. So at this time, all of the cost reductions, the cost savings that people see are from the federal government and subject to federal continuation. There have been discussions at the state level over the past year or so about potentially adding some amount of state to that funding to that. That at this point is not funded. And really, the amount of federal money coming in through these federal tax credits is not something the state can fill in.
So in
Pennsylvania alone, in 1 year, that's about $600 million flowing through to people to help make coverage more affordable. And that's money that eventually makes its way to the healthcare system in terms of reimbursing for medical care. So when you're looking at that amount of money, that's not something the state can fill in. And also, you know, you're really looking at that money coming out of the healthcare system, and there's broader impacts there as well.
Yeah. Amid all this, something we haven't touched on yet, I believe there's been a change just in how enrollment works. There's no sort of automatic carryover year to year. You have to re-enroll. And I'm curious, first of all, if you're hearing from folks about that, there's any confusion out there about how the enrollment process works now, and sort of what your messaging strategy is for folks to make sure, I guess, they're aware of whatever changes are taking place within just the enrollment process, not talking about the price at all here.
Yeah, there have been some other changes that you're alluding to that were made over the summer through H.R. 1, the big, beautiful bill, that make it harder to enroll on top of the enhanced tax credits, making it more expensive to enroll. The change you're talking about actually doesn't take place for two more years. So we are allowed to automatically renew people over to next year for this open enrollment period. But we are encouraging everyone to come in and update their information and really take that step now just to get into the practice, but also because there are more federal penalties if people do not accurately project their income for next year. Mm-hmm. So it's more important than ever for people to come in, make sure the income on the application aligns with what they're thinking they will make next year so that they can make sure they're getting the correct amount of tax credit.
And I asked Julie this question earlier, just sort of what would happen if the Democrats and Republicans are able to reach a deal on this and they're able to restore at least some form of expanded subsidy. Could Penny like react? What would that look like if they were able to do something last minute?
Yeah, I mean, these are the conversations we have every single day at Penny. We've been contingency planning for what feels like years, but it's been a couple of months of contingency planning. And the bottom line is that the amount of tax credits are so important for Pennsylvanians to be able to afford coverage that we will make that happen no matter when it gets and if and when it gets extended. So ideally, the best time to do that is now before people have made decisions about whether to drop coverage or not because of those higher prices. But even if that extension comes in later this year, we will work as quickly as possible to make sure people have that affordability, that affordable coverage back in place. It will not be a switch. It will take time for us to make those changes. And our commitment is to making sure we communicate with anyone looking for coverage, anyone who has coverage through Penny, about what that timeline looks like. And we will make sure people have time to make updates and shop after that with that new affordability in place. But again, that's all dependent on that actually being extended at the federal level. But we stand ready to make sure Pennsylvanians can get access to that as quickly as possible.
Do you think your reaction time there would be measured in weeks, months, days? I mean, can you give us a sense of just how quickly, realistically, you could sort of turn around and reflect new prices in the marketplace?
Yeah, and a lot depends on exactly when it's passed, but we would be looking at weeks, yeah, not days.
Yeah. By the way, I understand that you've talked to some folks in Pennsylvania and have heard some of their stories. Do you have one that you would like to share with us as we wrap up with you, Devin?
Sure. I mean, I think one theme that stands out, and there's one story that really resonates with this, is people feeling like they're doing everything they're supposed to. And really having health insurance is such a key component of that. And there's a lot of sort of confusion and frustration with why coverage would be allowed to get so much more expensive. For example, there's a woman who shared with us that she has Penny coverage. She also has a seizure disorder, and that Penny coverage helps her pay for that medication, very expensive medication, to keep those seizures at bay. That's allowed her to drive to work a little bit away from where she lives, where she works as a professional in the mental health substance use area, which, as we know, there are shortages of professionals in that area, and that's really an important place to have people working. So she's really concerned about if her insurance goes up, she's not going to be able to work and the impacts on that. She's also pregnant, so she's concerned about, you know, if her seizures cannot be managed, the impact on both her and her child, if that coverage is too unaffordable for her to maintain. And really just the reality of being able to maintain that coverage if she's not able to continue working and continue managing her medical condition. So it's stories like that. And then we also have had several people say that they've gotten preventive screenings that have caught cancer early, and they really credit having coverage for the reason they're still with us today. And so I think those stories are really powerful.
Well, thank you so much. That's Devin Trolley, Executive Director of Penny, which is Pennsylvania's Obamacare marketplace. Devin, appreciate the time today on Studio 2.
Thank you.
Yes, we see you on the phone lines,
folks. We're going to get to you at the other side of the break.
Lots of comments and calls. We're going to get to you on the other side of this break. I'll just read this quick comment from Jess. Health insurance premium skyrocketing is absolutely ridiculous. Mm. I am one of the people whose costs will quadruple. Oh, it's clear to me both sides need to step up to the plate here and work something out and make health insurance benefits affordable once again.
Yeah, thank you, Jess, for that comment.
Studio 2 at WHYY.org is the email, the number 888-477-9499. Much more to come on Studio 2. Do not go anywhere.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
And welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. This hour, we've been talking about rising health insurance costs, especially for people who buy their coverage on the ACA exchanges. If the health insurance subsidies are allowed to expire at the end of the year, plans may be unaffordable for many people. And that is the issue at the root of the government shutdown. Our guest this hour is Julie Rovner, Chief Washington Correspondent for KFF Health News.
Yes, and our question for you, our listeners, is this. What would you do to make health insurance more affordable in the U.S.? And also, if you are impacted by these expiring subsidies, if you're going to see your health care go up, give us a call. Tell us your story. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, share this video and leave your comments in the chat. We got a whole bunch of callers, so we're going to go to a couple back to back before we jump back in the conversation. We have Chris from Center City on the line. Chris, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, yes. Responding to the question of the day about how to make healthcare more affordable, I think the answer is pretty straightforward, single-payer healthcare. I mean, if you look at other countries that have that, they spend so much less on care, and the people live longer and have better quality of life. And I think that a lot of the issues with healthcare, from the rising costs to burdens on small businesses, can be traced back to the fact that we have these middlemen insurance companies who are price gouging and basically making this entire thing into a boondoggle.
Yeah, thank you. That's Chris from Center City. We also have Stephen from Bryn Mawr on the line. Stephen, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Well, we hear in the news that we have 40 million Americans receiving food stamp benefits. And then we're talking about subsidies for health care. Well, those subsidies, I'm paying for them. My health care premiums have gone up. I'm married with children. And I work full time, and my health care premiums have skyrocketed because I'm paying for these subsidies. And then, of course, we have the 30 million illegals who have come into the country, and they are also causing a burden on our health care system. So, I mean, folks, first off, what we have to do, the previous caller, single payer, we can't have single payer in this country. Mm-hmm. First off, we're no longer all Americans. You know, we've got 30
all right,
million
Stephen,
illegals.
Okay, let's wind it down here. Just your quick prescription then.
Well, first off, you have to let Americans see what the Affordable Care Act has done. Meaning, let the cost explode. Let the folks who are on that coverage mm-hmm. see that this is the bill of goods that Obama and the left sold you. Uh-huh. It was fully intended to drive up health care.
And we got to let you go, Stephen. Thank you.
Stephen, thank you so much for holding on and for making that comment. Just fact check, there are not 30 million undocumented people in this country. There is fewer than half of that. So just want to make sure that was clear. I think Stephen's broader point, however, is that the ACA just doesn't work. It's broken. And that these subsidies were a Band-Aid on a sort of a financial gaping mm-hmm. wound. Is this evidence, Julie Rovner, that there was something broken fundamentally in the way Obamacare was set up? That is the argument many Republicans are making.
It is. Actually, there's evidence that there was something fundamentally broken in the way Obamacare was explained. Mm-hmm. What the caller doesn't mention, and he may not even know, is that he's getting a subsidy that's probably even bigger than the subsidy that's going to the people who are buying their insurance on the exchange, because his employer is able to provide his insurance tax-free, and he doesn't have to pay, even though he's paying premiums, he's probably not paying the entirety of the premium, and he doesn't have to pay tax on the portion of the premium that his employer pays. That is the single largest tax subsidy in the federal income tax that there is the employer exclusion for health insurance. So, and obviously, you know, people who are getting Medicare and Medicaid are getting tax breaks, tax subsidies. So it was in the past, before the Affordable Care Act, people who were buying their own insurance were the only people who were not getting a tax break from the government. And now they are. It's basically equalizing the tax breaks that everybody else is getting who has insurance. But that's sort of little known because, of course, the insurer, the employer exclusion is either not understood or invisible to most people.
And so, you know, Stephen had a point. I mean, we have seen the cost of healthcare go up. And so I want you to sort of, Julie, explain to us what is driving these costs up. And we've seen the spike, especially in the past few years. Is it all these people jumping on to, you know, the ACA? What is causing this problem that is felt by all of us?
No, we're having structural problems in the healthcare system. You know, we had kind of a big, the Affordable Care Act at the beginning actually did deter or hold down some of the spending increases for several years. And then, of course, we had the pandemic, during which healthcare spending dropped dramatically because people were afraid to go to the doctor, and they didn't. So when the pandemic ended, we started to see people who had maybe waited too long to go to the doctor, people starting to go back. That sort of the demand that had been dampened by the pandemic came back. So we saw some increases. We're also seeing increases in the consolidation of healthcare, and you know, with now insurance companies owning providers, owning hospitals and doctor practice. And private equity coming in and basically trying to make a profit in healthcare because it's a fifth of the economy. So there are a whole lot of reasons why the cost of healthcare is going up. Many of them we don't have, as the first caller mentioned, in other countries because there is not so much of a profit motive in healthcare as we have here in the United States. Those who argue to maintain the profit motive say that's what drives innovation, and that is clearly true. In some cases, that's why we've been so divided as a society about which direction we want to move. Do we want to be sort of more free market or more government controlled? We've basically done neither. And so our healthcare system just kind of wends its own way and becomes, I think, increasingly more dysfunctional. It's getting more expensive, less efficient, harder for people to navigate. I don't think anybody is happy with it. There's just no consensus on how to fix it.
So when we look at the ACA now, sort of from the 30,000 foot view and sort of its full history, its full scope, we can say it has expanded coverage for people, right? So that part, which was part of the promise of Obamacare,
we are at an all-time low in terms of percentage of the population that doesn't have insurance. It's about 8%. It was about 14% when the Affordable Care Act passed.
So that part, we can say they have accomplished some of their goal. The other part of trying to bend the cost curve, which I don't know if that was the central goal of Obamacare, but it was part of what was sold with Obamacare. I think what you were saying is for a time we saw that, but maybe it has relapsed a little bit in terms of its ability to try to bend that acceleration of healthcare costs.
People found workarounds to make more money.
Yeah.
Congress sort of backed off and repealed most of the taxes that were supposed to pay for it. Taxes on things like medical devices and pharmaceuticals, and obviously the big, you know, the individual mandate penalty, which the Republicans repealed during the first Trump administration. So basically all of the pay-fors for the Affordable Care Act have been wiped off. The only thing that's been, you know, they took away the broccoli and left all the candy.
Wow. Killick on YouTube says, what would I do to make health insurance more affordable in the U.S.? Put the people in Congress on the same health insurance as everybody else.
Yeah, I want to
Congress did require itself to buy insurance on the Affordable Care Act exchanges.
And it didn't help.
And most of their staffs.
Yeah. Interesting. I want to bring in another caller. We have Mary from Bensalem on the line. Mary, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
My comment is I am currently and have been for a couple of years on the Affordable Health Care Act. I do receive a tax credit. My tax credit is expected to expire, which will take me to $1,000 premium. Plus, I've already been notified there will be a $900 add to that $1,000 premium.
Wow.
I'm 62 years old. I'm not eligible for Medicare, so that $2,000 insurance cost is way more than I collect for Social Security.
Wow. So, Mary, can I ask what your plan is, if you feel comfortable sharing? So how you might try to accommodate this spike?
Sure. My plan and then a comment. My plan is I'm probably going to have to shop for a lesser plan. I am on the medium plan, which is considered silver, HMO.
Yeah.
The PPO prices were unaffordable. I'm probably going to have to drop down to the bronze plan. Your deductibles are much higher out of pocket. Your co-pays are much higher. I will say I know many people that are offered zero copay to use Teladoc, which that my primary's not happy with that. Yeah. That doesn't keep her in touch with my health care. And I do know many people use urgent cares. They can get in quicker. They can pretty much do everything, including chest x-rays. So they use urgent care as their immediate primary care visit.
Yeah.
So people have found ways that they're using to save money for themselves, but actually their health doesn't seem to be any better.
Yeah.
They have chronic conditions that they just keep putting out fires with at the urgent cares, at the emergency rooms. They don't seem to be getting better. Yeah. They just seem to be living longer with bad conditions.
Thank you, Mary.
Great
from Bensalem.
Great insight.
And so, Julie, Mary's story is just very striking because for her, you know, living without health care is not an option. But there's going to be a lot of people who will have to choose no health care as an option. And so people have been talking about this whole death spiral. That, you know, when certain people who are going to take the risk, they're not going to get health care. And those are usually the healthier people, right, that are helping to subsidize health care. Can you talk about this death spiral and what could possibly happen if you have a lot of people who have no choice and maybe they don't have to prioritize health care like our last caller and they decide to opt out? How will this impact the overall system?
I don't think we're going to go back to the death spiral because we're just going back to what it was before the premiums were enhanced. And I found those numbers that I had been looking for, that right now people at the lower end of the scale can get have to pay 0% of their income to get what the caller was talking about, that sort of mid-level silver plan. And people at the higher end of the income range have to pay no more than 8.5% of their income. And when the expanded subsidies go away, people at the lower end will have to pay 2% of their income for their premiums, and people at the upper end will have to pay 10%. But remember, that 10% cuts off at 4 times poverty. I think that we've now heard from several callers, and this is what I was trying to say, the people who are going to be most impacted are not just those people who are losing their premiums at that top level of income, but also who are older, because older people can be charged more. This was one of the big fights during the Affordable Care Act. Insurance companies had always sort of charged younger, mostly healthier people substantially less than older people, and they sort of narrowed it. So now younger people are actually subsidizing older people a little bit more, but older people do still have to pay, I think, 3 times more in premiums than those younger people. So if they're going to lose their tax credits and their premiums are already higher, you can see why they're becoming completely unaffordable.
I want to read this comment from Laura, who is responding to a prior caller talking about the cost of ACA and how much it costs taxpayers. And this is an interesting retort from Laura. Obamacare saved my ability to work, own a small business, and be a productive taxpayer. Without insurance, I would not be able to afford a very expensive medication that allows me to function and work. I'd have to file for Social Security disability and other welfare benefits. Obamacare does the same for so many other people. Interesting comment there from Laura. Okay, so Julie, I'm just curious what you're watching for in the next month or so, or maybe it's a few months, like the sort of what you see is the key period, the key timeline here to potentially prevent all of this from happening, or at least a lot of it from happening.
Well, I think one of the possibilities, and this will make, you know, sort of the people who are running the exchange's heads explode, is that Congress might continue the expanded subsidies, but only in part. Yeah. They might put a, they want to require people at the lower end to pay something rather than nothing. As I said, with the expanded premiums, those under 150% of poverty can get that silver plan for no premium. And they might want to cut off, they might want to have a maximum cap. It might be higher than 400%, which is what it will go back to if they don't do anything. But right now, it just comes off. So they might impose a cap of, say, 600% of poverty, which would, you know, incorporate more of those sort of middle income people. That would be really confusing for the people who are running these exchanges and the insurers to try and do. They would not just have to revert one to another. They would have to go in and make all kinds of changes. But I think that's the most likely scenario at this point, is that if there is a deal, that it's not going to be, it's not going to be, you know, yay or nay. It's not going to be extend these subsidies or don't extend these subsidies. It's going to be extend them in part. So that's what I'm really watching for, is to see how that plays out. There's also a big fight on anti-abortion forces would like to double down on the, you know, there was a gigantic compromise with the Affordable Care Act about how the Affordable Care Act would or wouldn't pay for abortions, and it mostly doesn't, but there are anti-abortion forces that want to make that, you know, double, triple that, and that will get into a fight that I'm not sure could be resolved.
And that is the topic for another show, I would imagine. Yes, Julie Rovner, Chief Washington Correspondent for KFF Health News. Boy, you covered a lot of ground for us this hour.
You really did.
Thank you so much, Julie.
My pleasure.
And so sorry to Andrew from Mays Landing and Adrian from Elkins Park who were waiting on the line. Sorry we didn't get to you today, but hopefully you'll call in another day. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I'll end this comment from Jonathan. Yeah. I'm a single parent of two, have health coverage through Penny for myself and my older child. I can't afford the premiums and copays as it is. Any increase will be devastating. Really appreciate everyone who shared their personal stories this hour. You made this show so much better with your insights.
Yes, and thank you so much to our producers, Debbie Builder and Andreas Copes. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, Al Banks and Tina Calicay engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory from Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We will talk with you tomorrow.